first topic is IFRS 5, papers 20A, B, and C. A little introduction is in order, I think, on these. We regrouped after the last meeting. One of the concerns that's been expressed is that the submission that we got was terribly company-specific. It focused on facts that were uniquely associated, I think, with one company. And that obscured our thinking, I believe, because we want to address the issue more generically. The issue that Michael and Philippe and I discussed at the ESMA meeting was much more in terms of how do you apply IFRS 5 in the IPO context, and then the subsequent question about a change rather than the specific facts of a particular registrant. In my view, those facts, as we learned at the last meeting, been signed off by the appropriate regulators, that they are a done deal, and there's no intention of this conversation to unwind what a particular registrant did. What we want to deal with is the much more generic case, and so I think Denise has tried to write these papers by focusing on the more generic case rather than the company-specific facts that we had in the submission. With that, Denise.
Thank you.
You were already on.
Oh, okay, thank you. At the March 2013 meeting, the Interpretations Committee analyzed a request to clarify the application of the guidance in IFRS 5 regarding the classification of a non-current asset or disposal group as held for sale in the case of a disposal plan that is intended to be achieved by means of an initial public offering. And the question was whether the disposal group would qualify as held for sale before the prospectus is approved by the securities regulator. So as you know, the staff took a preliminary analysis, but we did not reach any final conclusion. And as Wayne mentioned, well, this paper takes a more generic view on the submitter's question, and we analyzed the guidance in paragraph 6 to 9 of IFRS 5 under two different approaches, which are reflected in the paper as view A and view B. And we concluded that in determining whether a sale of a disposal group by means of an IPO is highly probable is really a matter of judgment. However, from the guidance in IFRS 5, we observed that an entity must meet the first three criteria in paragraph 8 of IFRS 5, and then it should make a probability assessment of the remainder criteria in this paragraph. So we support view A in our paper. And our recommendation to the Interpretations Committee is not to take this issue into the agenda because we think that the guidance in IFRS 5 is clear. And we don't need to add anything in this respect. So we are therefore asking you whether you agree with this first conclusion that we have.
Comments, questions for Denise? Bert?
I agree with the paper and the analysis of the staff and also with the tentative agenda decision.
Cass?
I agree with the conclusion not to take this agenda, but I'm just confused that I understand the trying to generalize it, but the paper argument set up the criteria and make a judgment seems like a kind of interpretation, and I'm a little bit concerned about supporting view A because it's kind of original, maybe the first three criteria as using as a checklist. I think we should maybe make a judgment anyway. So understanding the criteria or in paragraph 8, but we can use that criteria and make the final judgment. I'm leaning more towards a view B, but I'm not quite sure to come up with this final judgment. So I think it seems like an agenda rejection note is trying to write up the interpretation, I'm a little bit concerned about that.
I guess, Kez, the question I would have for you, I understand your comment, but in looking at those first three criteria, could you ever argue that you had an asset held for disposition if an appropriate level of management hadn't been committed to the disposition? It seems like those are sort of, you have to meet those, or you couldn't ever be thinking you were in IFRS 5.
But I think the paper also argued, management authorization or those, must have. I can understand that, but there might be a situation that might doesn't meet that criteria, but we can make a judgment. So I'm not clear yet.
Okay, I guess while I understand your, I'm not sure what the solution would be for your problem.
Well, but ultimately, the fundamental question from the submitter, whether this securities regulator, prospectus is approved or not, is quite not sure, because it doesn't answer the questions from the original submission.
Okay, I see that point. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just go around the room then. Andrew?
Well, I was generally okay with the analysis, but I think the thing we were asked was about the implication of regulatory approval, and I'm okay with the analysis, I do think the agenda decision comes across as an interpretation. And so it seems to go beyond the question that was asked.
Okay, Sean?
Well, I'm in view B. To answer your question, I think the strict reading of the standards lead you to believe that each one of these first three is required. However, being in a principle phase, I can see that one would be so insignificant to the overall assessment of whether or not the sale will be achieved that I would hesitate to put such weight on each of them. So my point is, I agree that this looks like an interpretation. I disagree with the statement the paragraph before last that is very specific to A to C. I don't think that we have to be to put that in the agenda decision, and so I disagree with
it. Right.
When I was reading the paper, I was not sure it was view A, view B. I thought it was confusing the things a little bit. I always thought that IFRS 5, it's a question of assessment of the facts and circumstances, the current existing facts and circumstances, and the likely facts and circumstances that you need, and you look at all the criteria based on that. So distinguishing between those that are probable, those that are not probable, just required, for me, I'm not sure it is adding anything. So I'm skeptical about where this is leading to. Not disagreeing. Ultimately, I think that I was more in favor of the view A. It's just that, you know, making or trying to make such a distinction, saying, "Oh, you have a probability assessment here versus a requirement here," just not how I read IFRS 5 or how I apply IFRS 5.
John?
I agree with staff. I think it's clear that view A is IFRS 5. The first three are criteria that must be met, and you assess the probability of the other three criteria as to whether they, for the purpose of whether they affect the classification or not. Just two comments on the agenda decision wording. I don't understand the second last paragraph in the agenda decision, that doesn't make sense. It says the committee observed that an entity should make an assessment of whether a disposal of a non-current asset or disposal group by means of an IPO must meet criteria A to C above. I mean, you need to make an assessment of whether you meet the criteria. You don't need to make an assessment of whether a disposal by means of an IPO must meet the criteria. It must meet the criteria. Those are the criteria in the standard. And the only other comment on the agenda decision, I thought it would be helpful if there was something which referred to the fact that judgment needs to be exercised in determining whether criteria A to F are met, which I think is maybe self-evident, but it's, you know, they're not, you have to apply a level of judgment, and it maybe goes back to Kaz's point, you have to apply a level of judgment in determining whether you've met A to C as well as assessing the probability of D, E, and F.
Mm-hmm. Anyone?
Yeah, in general, I agree that the analysis are made by the staff, but I have some observations for some of the paragraph, like paragraph 30 and 30C. Normally, at the very early stage of an IPO, we don't know how much money we can expect to raise. So those and also for the 30B, for an IPO, you know, there's no any definitive timetable of what is going to happen, and so those kind of analysis may not the case for an IPO exactly. And I also have comments for the wording in the rejection wording, and could we add some words in the in the sentence, the interpretation committee observed that the following criteria, paragraph A of IFIs, can we add it express in advance at the kind of words must be met to in order to conclude that disposal is highly probable. And I would also recommend that in this paragraph interpretation committee observe that the above must meet criteria A to C above. We may add the words like first demonstrate why the occurrence of certain events.
Maybe you can sit with Denise with, I'm not sure what your wording would be there. It's not clear to me what you want to add.
Just add some words like those events. When those events happen.
Oh, okay. So what you would like it to say is have been met based on the occurrence of particular events or something like that?
Yeah, and let's see. The second paragraph. After the sentence above, I mean the word after the word above, we can mention that as demonstrate by the occurrence of certain events, it will be helpful to.
Okay, we'll work on that. If we go ahead with this language at all. Guido?
Oh, I'm fine with the decision. I was also struggling to see where the difference is between A and B, because my understanding is that even for A, when it comes to the three criteria, you have to apply judgment. But I'm fine with it. I mean, I was also struggling with the wording must. When I read the word should, I always thought that that is also something like must, but maybe it's because I'm not a native speaker. So should is, it should be, but must not be. Now, based on this, I'm fine with the decision.
Scott?
Yeah, I think the agenda decision is fine. I think that the staff's analysis tracks the words in the standard. First three say must, the others say should. And although we often think of should as being must, it is different. I'd also observe that the three musts are related to things that you should know whether they have happened already or not, and the three shoulds are all about predicting what may happen in the future. So there's some logic as to why they would have different words attached to them. So I think the agenda decision does fine.
A couple of observations. I'll work from the bottom of my list up. But she's not on the phone. We don't have a working line.
I thought I heard some.
Joanna, are you on the phone?
Yes, I have actually just managed to join. There was a problem. So I've
okay.
Missed most of the conversation.
Well, we're on paper 20A. Did you have observations about that?
I agree with the conclusion, if you like, that we should reject it. I like the way that we've done it at a high level. I have to admit, I did just hear what Scott had to say. The bits between the must and the should be, and whether, as Denise has done, really to distinguish between the two, quite honestly, I'm not sure I would have done that. It gets the answer. I did say that I would send through some draft wording, and I haven't managed to do that, as to maybe to do it a different way. I'm happy to do that if you think it is worthwhile. So, yes, I'm comfortable with the conclusion, but the distinction between the must and the should, and one you need to use probability assessment and the other you don't, worries me.
Thank you, Joanna. Okay, before I come back in, we'll go back to John and back to Laurence.
I mean, I think maybe there's an over-focus on the use of the words must and should. I think if you read paragraph 8, as Scott said, it's quite clear the first three things are criteria or events that should have happened. In other words, in terms of time, they're things which should be states of existence. The other three are things which where you have to, it said it should be expected, use words like expected to qualify for recognition as a completed sale within 1 year. The plan should indicate that it is unlikely that significant changes. They're all forward-looking. So whether you use must or should, you're talking about two different time dimensions. So, and maybe the focus on whether must and should are the same word is actually not particularly helpful.
Laurence?
That's the point I was making earlier on. It's an assessment of the evidence you gather for things that are required now versus things that you expect to happen in the future. Mm-hmm. And maybe what is causing or may cause a problem in the draft rejection. Whereas the first three elements, A, B, to C, just reflect the wording in paragraph 8, the little twist that is introduced in the rejection for D, E, F is that your introduction to D, E, F is set, you say, must be assessed on a probability basis. Whereas the word you must assess on a probability basis is not in paragraph 8. Paragraph 8 says the seller is expected to be completed in 1 year, you should consider whether you're going to have changes to the plan, and so on. So, and I'm afraid that then if we add up the word probability here, people are going to ask, what probability? More likely than not, 70%, 30%, and so on. So this is why I'm not so much convinced that we need to introduce a probability consideration, whereas we are just making an assessment of the facts and circumstances to decide whether currently, based on the evidence you have today, you can conclude on A, B, C, and what are the expectations you have today for D, E, F.
Okay, Laurence, the reason for introducing the word, the probability notion there is because of the overall requirement, paragraph 7, that these the disposal must be highly probable. And then paragraph 8 is explaining how you achieve that.
Okay, a couple of observations. A couple of you have observed that we're supposed to be in the principles-based business. Don't go there on this standard. It's not principles-based. It's anti-abuse-based. And it was designed to converge with the U.S. standard, and I was there for both of them. The entire intention was to stop abuse, to stop people from managing earnings by classifying something as held for sale on February the 1st, after the close of the year. And that was the driving force behind the FASB's deliberations and by our deliberations. So don't try and think about principles-based standards on this one, because it's not. It's anti-abuse-based. I take the point that this agenda decision tiptoes close to the line of being a quasi-interpretation. All of our agenda decisions do to a degree. This one may get a little closer to the line, and I'll ask at the end of these comments for you to make a call on that one. The alternative that a couple of you have raised is would be to just address the question of whether regulatory approval of a prospectus is required. And that was the submission. That was not the conversation, I think, that we had with the regulators. They were much more concerned about broader questions about how they apply IFRS 5 in an IPO situation. So, to a degree, yeah, we'd answer the question that was written down, but when we drilled down with the regulators, they were much more interested in an overall assessment of how they thought through IFRS 5. I think the most efficient way to address this is to have an initial show of hands of those who would support, subject to drafting changes, the agenda decision as presented in the paper.
Add me to those hands, please.
Okay. How many do we have with Joanna?
Including Joanna, 8.
8, okay. Let me rephrase it just to be sure. How many would not object? 8 is enough to carry in any event, but I'd like to see the strength of the feeling. So how many would not object? Okay. That gets better. So, okay. I should have learned from David Tweedy. I should have asked the second question first. But, okay. Denise, that settles that. You have some drafting changes. Joanna, please do send yours in. Denise, please sit down okay. with Fei Long to be sure that you understand his, because I'm not, I think I understand the direction he was going, but let's make sure of that. Okay, 20B.
Okay, well, also at the March 2013 meeting, the Interpretations Committee analyzed another request from the same submitter to clarify the application of the guidance in IFRS 5 in the case of a change in a disposal plan from a plan that previously qualified as held for sale to a plan to spin off a division and issue a dividend in kind to the shareholders. The question was whether such a change in a disposal method would qualify as a change to a plan of sale in accordance with paragraph 26 of IFRS 5. So our preliminary analysis indicated that a decision to change the form of disposal does not automatically cause an entity to fail to meet this criteria. And what triggers a change to a plan of sale is failing to meet the criteria in paragraph 7 to 9 of IFRS 5. In this paper, we reaffirm those observations. And what we also observed that the measurement guidance in paragraphs 27 to 29 was not meant to be applied in such circumstances in which a disposal group moves seamlessly from held for sale classification to held for distribution classification. We conclude in our paper that the fact that paragraph 26 does not clarify that a change from a sale to a distribution is not a change to a plan of sale is a mere oversight. Consequently, our recommendation to the Interpretations Committee is that we should make some amendments to IFRS 5 to address this lack of guidance. And our proposed amendments are explained in paragraphs 49 to 50 and also in the appendix to this paper. And we ask in the Interpretations Committee whether they agree with our proposed amendments to IFRS 5.
Okay, Joanna?
Good analysis, and I 100% agree.
Okay, you're not absolutely clear on the line. 100% for or against?
100% agree, for.
Okay. 100%. Gotcha now. Okay. Guido?
I also agree with the proposal of the staff. It may be that in the wording, the proposed amendment was what Denise just said, that if we make a change immediately after that, the word immediately is not included in the wording. So it might also be that you have a change held for sale and then take some time and then you go to disposal.
Yeah.
Maybe that would help, but otherwise I that would.
Staying down at this end, Scott?
Agree in general with the analysis and in the proposed amendment in paragraph 25A, I didn't like some of the words. Said if an entity reclassifies from being held for sale to held for distribution or vice versa, the entity shall not consider this as a change to a plan of sale. Well, I think it still is a change. It just isn't one that disqualifies
point taken.
From the held for sale criteria. So I would rephrase that, because otherwise it kind of sounds like we're saying ignore the fact that, you know, you've made any changes to it. I think the fact is, we're analyzing those changes and deciding that those changes don't affect the account.
Point taken. John?
I agree with the recommendation. Just two comments on the end of the sentence that's added at the end of paragraph 29. I think that should actually say distribution. It says any non-current assets that do not meet the criteria for held for distribution shall cease to be classified as held for sale. I think it says held for distribution in accordance with 26A. And the only other thing is in BC3A, the statement, the conditions required by paragraph 8 of IFRS 5 for a sale to be considered highly probable are very similar, if not identical, to the conditions. I just don't like are very similar, if not identical. I think we should just say are very similar or are similar to the conditions. I think that's the point.
Are similar.
Yeah. We should know whether they're similar or identical because we wrote them.
Does that mean we must or we should? Laurence?
Yeah, same thing. I agree with the proposals. In terms of drafting, I would have put paragraph 25A after 26A, because you start by saying, so you cease to qualify. You no longer meet the criteria, you cease to qualify, whether it was a disposal plan by sale or by distribution. However, if you have change in the method of disposal, but it's still a disposal plan, and you meet the criteria, you don't apply the above paragraph. I think it needs better. Mm-hmm. Say it's an exception to the principles you have introduced above, rather than starting by this and saying and stating after what are the requirements.
Charlotte?
Okay. I agree with the paper. My only question was on the position that if management were committed to at the beginning to doing one or the other, and it was just dependent on which one came to fruition first, would you be in a position that you met the criteria then, or is it only if you change your plan halfway through that you could carry on? And it was only with reference to the criteria which says that management must be committed to a plan for disposal, or whether it's just being committed to disposal.
Yeah, I suspect you're probably reading it more carefully than it was written, as Denny Beresford used to say.
Well, it is. When you go back to that criteria must be written, and we quite often see the situation where the plan is to dispose of by any of several means, and then we could say, well, we don't meet that, which would really help your anti-abuse clause.
Okay. Subject to wording changes that you feed into Denise, does anybody object to the staff recommendation? Okay, none appearing. Do feed those changes in, and we will incorporate them when we take it to the board, which is the next step.
Yes.
And we don't, 20C is just for information,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So we don't need anything. Okay, thank you, Denise.
Thank you.